Welcome back, Padres fans, to another episode of Ring the Bell Pods Talk. Get ready for some Padres baseball in 3, 2, 1. We're back for another episode of Ring the Bell Pods Talk. Nick Kreider joined by Heath Bell as always. Pods fans, we just swept the Cincinnati Reds. Not a good team, but nonetheless, it is a sweep. Feels good. The pitching staff was great. The bats didn't click the entire time, but we definitely had some flashes of good offense. Heath, I know you liked what you saw. I did. What were some of the highlights for you in the series?
Well, those are the teams that we have to win. You know, the Atlanta Braves, we split. They're a pretty good team, but they're kind of struggling right now. So when we win when we split a series, it's kind of like, okay, but we should have beat them. Everybody's kind of struggling against the Braves. So when the Cincinnati Reds come in and they're not particularly the best team for us to sweep them, it kind of shows, okay, yes, we are the better team. So what I liked about it is starting pitching was there. And guys started swinging the bat, and it wasn't just Machado hitting it, Cullenworth. It was other guys. Profar had a big day, and also on the defense had a big day. So it's, you know, CJ Abrams got another hit, so that was nice. But we got to have him play every day. So can he do it in the big leagues or not?
Right.
Or is Kim going to be the guy? But I liked what I saw just overall because we're supposed to beat those teams.
Yeah,
I was a little shaky, even though we split with the Braves. They're struggling. So we should have took 3 out of 4. But, you know, the old saying is when you play a 4-game series, you want to split, and a 3-game series, you want to sweep, or you basically want to win every series. And winning 2 out of 4 is a win, you know, is basically winning the series. But early on, if you want to be a first place team, you want to be a playoff team, you've got to win every series. And I like what they did against Cincinnati. I just, you know, a little worried about Atlanta because the Dodgers are next, and Atlanta is a good team. They're the defending World Series champs, and we could only take 2 out of 4.
Yeah,
when they're struggling. I mean, the Braves, you have to admit, Braves are struggling right now.
Yeah, they are for sure.
And now we're playing the Dodgers, first place team. I mean, are we going to rise to the occasion, or are we going to just say, well, you know, they're really hot right now? And just make excuses. That's why I love Bob Melvin, because I don't think he's going to make any excuses.
No, I agree. And I think we usually do rise to the occasion, no matter how good the Padres are. They try their best to play the Dodgers well, and they do. I mean, last year there was some pretty great games and some good series that we saw despite the record of the Padres. But yeah, you're right. We have to take care of the easy task at hand. You got to sweep the Reds, which we did, and you got to at least take 3 out of 4, in my opinion, against the struggling Braves while you can, right? You know, kick them while they're down, I guess, is the phrase. But yeah, I love the starting pitching. I mean, Mackenzie Gore finally really come into
fruition. He got a first win.
Like, yeah, first win, shutout. I mean, that was a great first, or not first outing, but second outing for him. I mean, his first two outings, he's looked like a pro. My question
he's going to win 15 games this year.
If he stays on the roster, I hope so. My question is, what are they going to do when Clevinger and Blake Snell come back? You have Yu Darvish, you have Joe Musgrove, Nick Martinez, you've got Clevinger, Sean Manaea, Blake Snell, and Mackenzie Gore. What do you do?
You get rid of one of them.
My thing is, though, pitching depth is so valuable, right? Like, what happens?
Oh, okay. So basically you're saying Gore's got to go down.
No. Maybe someone moves to the bullpen.
No, the bullpen's the worst thing for a starter. I mean, being honest with you, bullpen is the worst thing for a starter. You know, as much as I like Gore, if we really have to, if everybody's pitching good, send him down, keep him going. Next time we have a doubleheader, next time we need a pitching spot, send a reliever down, we call him back up and say, you're going to be our guy every time we need another starter. But we put him in the bullpen, and say our starters for the next 2 to 3 weeks do really well. and he's pitched one inning here, one inning there. Now what, when he starts? It happened to Weathers last year.
Yeah. No, yeah, you're right. I
he needs to go back down. All the great teams do that. They send their great starter back down, or they send a veteran to the bullpen.
Right.
So that's where Bob Melvin's got to step in and make the hard decision.
It's a good problem to have, though, you know, having pitching depth and having guys that can go toe-to-toe with some of the good teams. I mean, Clevinger has looked really good in his rehab starts. Haven't seen much of Blake Snell yet, so it's going to take some time, but I'm excited. I mean, this pitching staff has definitely been the highlight. Now, if the offense were to start clicking, we'd be winning more games. I mean, yes, we have nine wins right now, but we can't rely on Driggs and Profar to be the guy every day.
No, we can't.
He's already matched his season high in home runs. He had four home runs last season. Yeah, he worked out a little bit. Hit the weight room.
No, but here's the thing. If you're going to look at our offense, if you look at the Braves offense, just okay. Grissom's under hitting the Mendoza line, basically anything under 200 is the Mendoza line. Coneworth under 200. Will Myers is under 200. Abrams is under 200, but he's a rookie, so I kind of give him a little bit of grace because he's not playing every day, but he's starting to a little bit. That's a big worry to me. I mean, you know, Machado is hitting three and a half, and so is Hosmer. But who else is hitting the ball?
No one. It's really just Machado, Hosmer, and Profar.
And I think Coneworth, he's a really good hitter, but is he doing a sophomore slump? And if he is, he needs to hit in the seven hole.
Yeah.
Just put him in the seven hole. You're going to get more fastballs.
Bob Melvin keeps on putting him at the three hole.
I think he's trying to show him, and this is what I love about Bob, is
confidence in him.
You don't worry about it. He'll come. You're one of our main guys.
Yep.
And it's easy to be a person on TV outside just going, yeah, move him down. But I liked when I coach and I see this after 2 weeks, it's kind of struggling a little bit. All right, this is the plan. We're going to send you for the next week. We're going to put you down the six hole. Keep doing the same exact thing. You start roping the ball, even if you don't get hits. Right. And you start hitting the ball and have better at bats. Like I tell my son and the kids I coach, if you have better at bats, because you can't dictate you're going to get a hit or not. Just have a great swing on the ball, hit the ball solid. We'll move you back to where you should be in the three hole, but I'm just trying to get you jump started. But like, when's win? You know, that's the whole point. Like CJ Abram, I'd bring him up and the first like two or three games, he'd start like the first series against Arizona. You're starting the Arizona, you know, or maybe the first two games. And then we're going to go with the veteran guy just to get your feet wet for a day, and then go back to the rookie. And then, you know, after the first 7 to 10 days, can he hit? Mm-hmm. Does he have good at bats or not? But I mean, definitely Profar, he definitely can't be the guy. He's only hitting 250 and he had a great day. So his batting average jumped up, and you know, Grissom is leading off, but he's only getting on one out of every 10 at bats. So that's one out of every 2 to 3 games.
Our outfield's in trouble.
Yeah, I don't understand. You know, it's hard being a manager. It really is.
Yeah.
But I mean, the guys we brought in, Volt, he's hitting under 200.
Yeah.
You know, Kim's right at 200, so it's okay, whatever.
But Kim also doesn't get every day at bats, right?
Yeah, he's not getting any rhythm. So it's kind of, you know, he's another guy, you know. I think Kim, forgive me, I didn't look his career up, you know, his over in Asia, but I think he needs to play every day. And, you know, he'd probably be like a 260 hitter. And that's what we need as a bridge gap like, and for Tatis coming back.
Seems like they've been playing him a lot at short and CJ in the outfield, or CJ at second when Cronenworth needs a day off and goes to DH. So I like when they play at the same time. I think it's good for both of them for their development.
Mm-hmm. Who's this new kid? Jose
Ozukar? Yeah.
Ozukar.
He's got good speed. He's been taking some good at bats. I mean, small sample size, but great defender as well. I like what I see so far.
Why is he not playing over Grissom? Because he's just young.
He's young. Yeah. I mean, he's like one of those guys that I think was made the roster to be like a defensive sub or like a pinch runner. I mean, Grisham is a Golden Glove center fielder, and he's a guy who needs to, I think, just get in a rhythm, but it's just, it's taken a long time for him.
Well, that's the thing, is sometimes you take 2 days off, and if you have, you're Bob Melvin, say, Grisham, look, you're not hitting, and I respect you and everything, but we're going to put somebody else in front of you for this series.
Right.
But what I want you to do, it's a 3-game series. Let's maybe not do it against the Dodgers or the Dodgers. I don't know. And then say, come on, man. So this is what we're going to do. He's going to get these 3 starts. You have next series. I just need your mind right. You're trying too hard, blah, blah. But see, that's where I think Bob Melvin to a young guy like Tingler would be. If Bob went to Grissom and said, Grissom, look, I know you're struggling. You really want to do well. The next 2 days, the next 3 days, I want you to take BP. I just want you to relax. I'm going to use you as a pitch hitter. But the next series after that, you're playing. You're going to be my guy. I'm just giving you a little breather.
Right.
Where I think Grissom would go, okay, you know, I'll figure it out. But okay, I trust you. Mm-hmm. Where if somebody that's new as a manager would come in and say that, and he goes, dude, who is in, am I losing my job? You know, where I think, you know, somebody like Grissom would go, okay, I just need a little breather. And then come up and like, I'm not going to start the next 2 days just to get my feet, you know, under me or whatnot. And just, to, you know, try pressing, because that does happen with guys.
For sure.
So, yeah, I honestly see Bob Melvin, the most important thing that he's going to do, I'm hoping, is in the next series to road trip, the Dodgers, you know, 3 at home. And then we go on a 10-day road trip. So it's 3 in Cincinnati, 3 in Pittsburgh, play the Pirates, Pittsburgh. And then
we better win every single game on that road trip.
Then 2 in Cleveland. So
what a gauntlet that one is.
Yeah, I don't know. It's Cleveland Indians to me. I'm going to say that. It's always the Indians for me. Great organization. But anyway, it's just those 8 games are going to be really important, where when we come home, if Bob Melvin doesn't do some things to get the guys rolling, like Will Myers and Grissom and Coneworth, if we don't get those guys moving, it's going to be a long year for us. I'm just telling you right now, it's going to be a long year.
That's the road trip that needs to get guys back on track for sure. You know, we just talked about it at the beginning of the show. You need to take care of the easy wins, and you need to make sure that, you know, you get your guys in a groove on that road trip. I mean, there's guys on our teams that struggle at home that perform really well on the road. Will Myers is one of those guys. He hits mm-hmm. really well on the road. So hopefully we get him back in action, and he catches his stride there. So we've got 8 games on that road trip. What is considered a success on that road trip in terms of record, and what's considered a failure? I mean, I think going 500 is a failure.
500 is a failure, even if we go, we need to go 6-2, if not 7-1. If we want to be a playoff team and a team to be reckoned with, we need to go at least 7-1. 6-2 will be like, okay, we're a good team. We're definitely beating the bad teams. But, you know, what were our 2 losses? Did we just make some mistakes? And right. That's why we lost those games? Because if we didn't make mistakes and the other team just beat us, then we're in trouble.
And speaking of mistakes, haven't made one yet this season. 14 straight games without an error. That's a major league record to open up a season. It's pretty incredible, in my opinion. I mean, a lot of it has to do with management, I think. I think that's a manager thing, you know, a different mindset. The defense seems to be uber focused.
Yeah. And then I truly believe that's Bob Melvin right there. I really think that's what he brings in, that everybody's comfortable and everybody's doing what they need to be doing. But now it's, okay, Bob, can we get guys rolling? You know, I know he's probably already got some theories and some ideas out there, and he doesn't want to do too much just yet because he's the new guy, but he's got to get our guys hitting.
Yeah.
I mean, pitching is there for the most part. I'm really, really excited with everybody that's there doing their thing, but now it's hitting.
Yeah,
and it is. And me playing in Petco Park, this is what I hate about hitters. The ballpark's too big, right? One, they brought the fences in from when I played. But if you had a big outfield, don't you think it's easier to get a hit or a double?
Right.
So when like Adrian Gonzalez and Nick Hundley and Chase Headley were like, oh man, the outfield's so big. You know, this ballpark's really big. Are you just talking about home runs?
Yeah, exactly. You know,
I don't think we need to be worried about home runs. I think we need to be worried about getting guys on.
Exactly.
That's my big thing. And, you know, maybe I'm biased because I'm a pitcher. But that doesn't make any sense to me to say, oh, the ballpark's really big. But let me ask you this real quick. Of all those little trades that we did in the spring training, which one actually was a good one? I mean, I know it's an early sample size.
There's two that have been really great so far. One being the Sean Manaea trade, because he's been lights out. And then two, the Taylor Rogers trade. I mean, you look at so far, he's locked down every single save opportunity he's had. He's got five saves and hasn't really allowed any hits.
So pitching. So all those first basemen that we got really helped us, right?
Yep.
And how bad would management look right now if they traded for, you know, Eric Hosmer? They traded him away. What was it, the Mets?
I still think they would try to do it just because his contract is so big. It clears up some space off the books in order to go after other players or even extend guys. I mean, you still want to extend a guy like Joe Musgrove, right?
Yeah, I do. But, you know, that's where management, I don't know where management's coming in, because, you know, it's one of those things that, say Eric Hosmer has a great year this year. Say other guys start hitting, then you can possibly trade Eric, or at the offseason, he has a great year. Hey, man, he's figured it out. He's hot, this and that.
Right.
Go get him. But in spring training, it just seemed like, and this offseason was weird, but in spring training, I just didn't fathom to me.
Yeah.
You know?
I also don't think that it's going to be good for the team juju if they trade away a guy like Eric Hosmer. I mean, Manny Machado had openly said that he would be pissed if Eric Hosmer got traded, let alone Machado. I mean, think about the rest of the team as well. Blake Snell, that's one of his best friends.
And here's the thing is, does management even know that, or does Machado literally have to come out to the press and say shit like that?
Yeah, it might have to be that way, honestly.
I mean, so therefore your management sucks. And I'm not talking about managers or coaches. I'm talking about the people that actually make the decisions, the GM.
Well, what about your perspective? You know, when you were in a locker room and one of your close friends got traded, you know, or a guy that was a locker room presence that, you know, everyone trusted as a leader, what does that do for a locker room when a guy like that gets traded? You know, like when Jake Peavy
When Jake Peavy got traded, gosh, it was, we were doing really bad and we heard he was getting traded and he didn't go through because he didn't want to go anywhere. And he publicly said, he goes, no, I denied the trade. I have no trade clause. And then the next week came up and I knew it was going to happen before, because he told us, he's like, my agent came to me and said, this is the third time they're trying to trade you to the White Sox. So, and he's like, I got to figure out for my family, because it seems like they don't want me here. And then that's where Adrian and myself all of a sudden started going, oh crap. And then my last 3 years with San Diego, I was on the trading block the last 2 years. In July, is Heath Bell going to get traded? Is Heath Bell going to get traded? And for me, it was not a fun time, because like I wanted to stay in San Diego and everybody wanted me to stay in San Diego, but it wasn't in my hands. But it was like, man, what does management want to do here? You know, where I think management wants to win now. Back then, I don't think they necessarily wanted to win. They just wanted, you know, the ownership is not the same owner now. And Morad didn't have enough money to buy the team. We all found out later on he was just getting the luxury tax money to buy the team. And, so the Major League Baseball didn't allow him to do that as soon as they found that out, because he didn't have enough money in the bank. And they sold back to John Moore, and then these guys got it. So, but these guys want to win. The owners want to win.
Can't deny that.
And AJ, I think, wants to win, but I don't think he knows how to win. Does that make sense?
He's never been in a program where he has been winning. I mean, he came from the Rangers, right? And they haven't won anything. Yeah, they made the World Series a couple of times, but they didn't win.
But who was running that team? That was Nolan Ryan running that team.
Right. But he was in the organization. I'm just saying
he wasn't making decisions. It's like there's one, right. There's good coaches and there's great and there's good managers. Some coaches can't be managers. So there's some assistants that can't be the boss. When you're the boss, every decision relies on you. Mm-hmm. If you're like the bench coach, he's basically the second manager. If you go out there and the manager makes some bad decisions and I say, I'm the manager and you're my bench coach. And you tell me 3 days in a row to pitch this guy. So I pitch that guy. Doesn't work out. I don't go to the press and they're going, hey, you got a 3-game losing streak. You know, it seems like you keep putting in the wrong guy. Well, I'm just listening to my bench coach. So now as the manager, is he actually making decisions or is he just having other people tell him?
Right.
So he basically is go, well, no, this is what we tried to do. We talked, you know, the coaches got together and we made a decision, but really it falls on that guy, the manager. Mm-hmm. And it's then if I get fired, then you step in, even though you were making the decisions, but I was.
Yeah.
Allowing you to make the decisions.
It's funny that AJ is the guy that has been given the most opportunities. It seems like, I mean, you look at Jed Hoyer, right? Who won a World Series with Boston and goes to the Padres and only spends 2 years there and then goes to the Cubs and then wins a World Series.
Yep. Just goes to show the owners need some balls and sometimes make that hard decision. And this is my belief. The owners signed AJ to a 5-6 year deal. They didn't want to fire somebody and have to pay him. You know, if he sat at home, if he took another job, they wouldn't have to pay him because the money's guaranteed. So they're just like, well, let's just see how he does. And then the pandemic year was a teaser because last year, if we had another shortened season, we would have been right there, but we had injuries and we fell at the end. So this year, I mean, hopefully it's not the same way. I mean, think the Padres have a chance to do something special this year. But it's just, gosh. I'm not upset and I'm not frustrated. I'm just frustrated guys are not starting off a little bit better.
Yep.
But I do have 99.9% that I feel like Bob Melvin will literally do something in the next, like I said, the Dodgers series and this next 8-game road trip to get guys going.
Yeah. Well, this
is a too good of a manager not to get guys going.
This is a show me series for sure. When you play against the Dodgers, you want your guys playing the best of their ability. So hopefully this kind of gets them in a groove, but let's transition for a quick second. Cause you wanted to talk about the unwritten rules of baseball.
Yeah. So the unwritten rules, I'm starting to get really pissed off. So, and it's happening to the Padres more often and I'm getting really pissed off. Maybe I'm old school. Maybe I'm completely out of my mind. But the unwritten rule, I think somebody needs to write the damn book and
just write them down, right? Let's not make it unwritten anymore.
Yeah. So, but the title of the book should be Respect.
Okay.
And or Respect the Game. And, you know, if I get some time in the next year or two, or if I get, I don't know, somebody that can sit down and write faster than me or type faster than me, and that's probably everybody, let's actually make the damn book because we just had a series with the Giants that they bunted. So let me take on you.
They were up by like 10 runs.
It was 9 or 10 runs. They bunted. So what was your take on it?
I mean, for me, what it looked like was a young, inexperienced hitter trying to get on base in a situation where it didn't really matter. That was more of like a me thing from the player, right? Where it's like, I want to boost my average. You know, like I see a hole, I'm taking it.
Okay, so I take it the exact same way. Do I think it's disrespectful? No, because let me give you an example. Should the Giants just throw fastballs when they're up by 10 runs?
No.
Okay.
You still got to work on
your stuff. Pitchers are still trying to get people out, right?
Exactly.
So should the hitters not try to get on?
I'm with you.
So it's kind of in, you know, I've talked to so many people and they're like, but it's disrespectful. Well, bunting's part of your game. You know, it's like if Mike Trout goes up there and bunts, yeah, come on, you know, Albert Pujols, like
it's also different to steal in that situation. That's
well,
like,
here's the thing: that's steal like the one. Second, never have a problem with that. Steal third, yes. The reason is because you steal third, it's a pass ball, it's an easy run. Steal second, you're still trying to, you know, do as best you can,
Right.
But the key is, like, you just got to play hard. You know, the unwritten rules of no swinging with 3-0 when you're up. Why not?
I mean, if he's going to throw you a cookie, you might as well go out there and put swing. Your hand in the jar.
Like, Tatis got in trouble from his own
that
team.
That was bull crap. But you know what? Here's the thing. If Tatis didn't swing on that, it wouldn't have started Slam Diego. That was the first. Exactly. That was the first Grand Slam in San Diego that started this whole thing that sparked the team to hit four Grand Slams in a row.
Yeah.
So I mean that swing was necessary, and we've seen time and time again, no lead is safe in professional sports.
Exactly. So and then, like, you know, Dallas Braden with the Yankees in Oakland, where A-Rod ran across the mound. That's just I feel like when you play, if you respect your opponent, stuff like that doesn't happen.
Right.
Because what if A-Rod, and we all know A-Rod's a douchebag. Yes. And I said it on air. He ran across the mound, but what if he like tried to run? And when you run with spikes, you can try to mess up somebody's footing. Mm-hmm. You know, what if the pitchers ran up to the hitter when he was out of the box, moved a bunch of dirt in the box, and then said, I need a new ball, and then ran back. Pretty right. sure the hitter would be like, that's what disrespectful. The They're not going to be like, that's an unwritten rule. But we always think about anything that we don't like. That's an unwritten rule. No, it's disrespect.
Yeah.
Like, here's the thing. Hitting a home run, Bautista did this, you know, in Toronto. Everybody called it disrespectful. He hit a huge home run for Toronto, in Toronto. Forget who it was against. The Yankees or something.
And then the bat flip.
But did he do it to show up the pitcher, or was he just in the moment? Because I believe he was in the moment.
For now, sure.
Later on, yes, you see guys hit the ball and stare at the pitcher. Now that's disrespect.
Yeah, staring at the pitcher is one thing, but like the bat flip is, it's
become a person, part of the game. But let me put it this way. Ricky Henderson. He would hit the ball when Ricky knew it was a home run.
Stand there.
He had this little, you know, pop his shirt, pop his collar, whatever it was, kind of flip the bat a little bit, do this. And he just jogged, and nobody had a problem with it because that's what he did.
Ken Griffey, same way.
Ken Griffey was huge on it. Hit it, held the bat and stood there and looked at it. Then he jogged. But Ken Griffey never looked at the pitcher. He never did it as a disrespect. He goes, this is how I hit home runs. But Griffey and Ricky never did what like Yasiel Puig does or some other guys. They hit a home run, they pimp it and go, oh shit, it's only going to be a double. You know, where it didn't go out and they had to run.
Right.
Never saw Griffey do that. Never saw Ricky Henderson do that. That's a sign of you hit it. That's even like I've been in situations where I've thrown the pitch and as soon as the ball was released, I was like, no,
damn it. Yeah.
The guy hit it. I didn't even look. I just looked at the umpire and went, can I have another one ball? Because everybody knew it was gone.
Right.
Now there's some I've had home runs hit off me where you hit it and you're like, oh, please don't get all of that. And it just barely goes out. Well, I've always said, if you want to pimp a ball and stand there and watch it, hit it 20, 30 rows back. Where you hit the ball, everybody knows that's a home run.
Mm-hmm.
Don't hit a ball, stand there, flip your bat, do whatever you want to do, and it's two rows back because you did not know that was going
to go. The outfielder tries to make a play on it and barely misses it.
Exactly, and he's standing there doing his all routine, blah, blah, blah.
With bat flips and pimping as well, like, I mean, I think my take is, like, if you're a pitcher that doesn't want a hitter to pimp you, I mean, then just don't throw that pitch and
Well, but here's the thing is, the unwritten rule with that is if somebody shows you up, then you go retaliate at him.
Yeah, you throw it at him.
But it's when somebody shows you up, it's called they disrespect you.
Right.
Now, if somebody hits a home run and does a bat flip, that's not disrespectful. He's not looking at you. He hit the ball and he's admiring how far he hit the freaking ball.
Yeah, of course. He's okay. He's allowed to do that.
Just like, I said this when I was playing, when I struck you out and I pumped my fist, so be it.
Yeah, the only person you're not giving the middle finger to the batter.
You know, the funny part is the only person that was pissed that when I struck him out, I pumped my fist was soon to be Mr. 3000, Melky Cabrera, or not Melky,
Miguel
Cabrera. He hated when I struck him out. He stared me down. And the funny part is, when he was with Florida, I struck him out, and it was, this happened twice. Struck him out to finish the inning two different times. And I do what I do. I was jogging off because I was in middle relief at the time. And the dugout was like, dude, he's staring you down. So the next time I struck him out, I jogged off like I normally do. And then I peeked over and I see him staring at me. And I just kind of look back in the dugout because I'm like, what the hell are you staring at me for?
Yeah. If you don't want me to get excited, hit the ball.
Yeah. But my whole thing was I didn't look at you and go, oh, I got you. And then jogged off. I just put my head down and pumped my fist or screamed or whatever I did. And then went on my business. That was just an emotion, just a reaction that came out. I never planned to do that. That's just something that happened because I didn't do it every strikeout.
It's sports. And I mean, we get excited. We get pumped up. I mean, it's
so that's where I'm in. I got to write this book.
Yeah, but you know what's the book gonna do? You know, people are gonna follow the rules. I mean, I think people need to be less sensitive.
This generation will realize it's about emotion. It's not about disrespecting.
Right.
That's human all emotion. It is. And basically, it's how unwritten rules are stupid. The unwritten rule was basically meant to, you were just respecting other people. That's right. All it was. It's like Nolan Ryan back in the day, or Walter Johnson, any great pitcher back in the day. If you got in the box and you called time because you had to dig in to the dirt, the pitcher would throw one high and in and go, that's not your that's not your area. That's my area. I have a ball in my hand. You know, kind of that aspect. Like, you don't dig in, you walk in.
Right.
You know, so, but the generation has changed and the bat flip. And my whole thing is, everybody asked me a couple of years ago, what do you think about the bat flip? What do you think about the bat flip? I said, bat flip is fine as long as you know it's a home run. But as soon as you bat flip and it's not a home run, it's almost like you shouldn't be allowed to do that no more.
Yeah, well, you look like an idiot if you bat flip and it's not a home run, and that's on them.
Yeah, but the media doesn't promote it as much.
Right.
And we should make guys look like idiots. Just right. Like we make pitchers look like idiots, but they promote like the umpire was wrong when they throw a pitch and the pitcher starts walking off. You know, and it's like, that's not a strike, bud. Get back out there. You know?
Yeah.
So
a lot has changed. One thing that has changed, we'll touch on really quickly, the pitch indicator, the little remote control that tells pitchers what the catcher wants him to throw. What's your take on that?
I think we're getting dumber as going, because I know, sorry, Houston, but Houston is out there trying to figure out how many beeps they are to tell their hitters. You know, figure out what.
Yeah, they have supersonic earbuds that pick
up. Yeah, exactly, or something like that. But all joking aside, is growing up, I knew Domino's phone number, I knew my house phone number, I knew my friend's house phone number. Now we have technology, and we have computers in our hand as our phone, and I use this damn thing every day. And but the thing is I can't remember anybody's phone number anymore. Mm-hmm. So I really feel like, and I hate guys, I hate it. I seriously hate it, especially watching with my son, because his team does it where they pull out their back pocket. Okay, what's the scouting report? A little piece of paper. Oh, where should I go to this hitter? Did you ever go? I mean, gosh, we would have a 30-minute meeting before every game about every single batter. You know, a guy get called up, we would have a little meeting about him. Or some of the coach would come over and talk to us. This is what we're going to do. You know, the hitters, the defense would have a meeting what the pitchers are going to do. So we all have like our little homework to do what we were supposed to do. And it kind of weeded out the players with talent that with the 2 cents head. Now, if you have a 2 cents head, don't worry about it. We'll just tell you what to do. Mm-hmm. And I think it's making the baseball players dumber. And, you know, now let's get umpires, electronic strike zone. Well, why don't we just get an electronic pitcher?
Yeah.
Make robots pitchers, and we can all be just hitters.
I will say that there might be a slight aspect of speeding up the game involved, because you think about how long it takes. I mean, it takes a couple of seconds to throw down some signs every now and then, the pitcher to shake it off or to.
And
to,
just like, let's get every call right, and that will speed up the game.
Right.
Okay. Now there's no more argument. There's no more fun argument to rally your team to get thrown out of the game.
Yeah.
That you completely got rid of that. So it doesn't speed up the game. I guarantee it doesn't. Because what if the battery goes dead? What if you're not, if the crowd is like a playoff game, the crowd is so loud, you can't feel the beep, beep, beep.
Yeah. Well, I've seen guys who have gone back and forth between the pitch indicator electronically and then just throwing down signs, which in my mind, it's just like, what, like, why do you choose to do the pitch indicator and why do you choose to do the signs? Like, is it because there's a man on second? You know what? Like, come on, is the guy really going to steal signs? Like, I'm sure it happens, but I don't think it happens that frequently.
Guys steal signs all the time when it's easy to steal signs.
Right. Exactly.
But literally the hardest, but it's so easy. Outs plus one, you know, you could do outs plus two, outs plus three. So outs plus one, what it is no outs plus one. So it's the first sign. One out plus one, you know, and then you say outs plus one. So you have one out plus one.
What's the guy in second do? He just like taps his leg, you know, a certain amount of times.
For what?
If it's outs plus one, right? Let's say there's a man on second, outs plus one, you know, there's two outs. You know, you throw down the sign. Is he just tapping his leg for the batter to see? Is that how they relay the sign?
So you just put your fingers down, but it's the third sign. It's the third sign that the catcher gave is what pitch you're going to throw. Does that make sense?
Yep.
But here's the thing. You can do outs plus two.
Yep.
Outs minus one. That did it all the time. You know, when we knew something was going on, it was like, hey, we're going to do outs plus one. Or we're going to do every odd inning, we're going to do outs plus two. Every even inning, we're doing outs plus one. The other team will never know.
So crafty.
But here's the thing. It's so simple.
Yeah.
We can't, and players nowadays can't figure that out, or coaches can't figure that out, because I really believe it's because the nerds up front can't figure it out, and they can't really, they want to be the ones relaying everything to everybody.
These pitch indicators remind me of like those videos you see on the internet of like dogs pressing a button when they want to like go outside, or like when they have play, to go to the bathroom.
Pet
it's
me.
Like play, food, treat. It's like, come on, really? Like, is it that simple?
It really know. Is. I think it's that simple. So you're just basically all the players are dogs now.
Yeah. Well, we got another great series coming up with the Dodgers. Hopefully we can sweep them here in San Diego. I'm, in fact, going to the Friday night game today. And then we've got an easy road trip. Hopefully we can get at least 7 wins out of that one. So we'll come back with you guys next week and see how we did. Go Pods, baby.
Go Pods.
This episode of Ring the Bell Pods Talk is brought to you by BetOnline.ag. Go to BetOnline.ag today to get your free welcome bonus by using the promo code BELIEVE. That's BLEAV.